Hello, and welcome to the first of three exciting NABBW teleseminars that we're hosting this month. In a moment, I will introduce our guest, Barbara Hollis. But first, let me introduce myself and do a bit of housekeeping. For those of you who do not know me, I am Ann Holmes, the Boomer-in-Chief of the National Association of Baby Boomer Women, which is found online at www.nabbw.com, and we have a forum at boomerwomenspeak.com, which is, of course, B-O-O-M-E-R, womenspeak.com. Our websites are the number one sites found via the major search engines when you search on the keywords baby boomer women. If you're not a member of the NABBW, and I know that a number of you on the call are not, you're welcome to join us. You'll find a handy link on the front page of the NABBW site, which you can use to join. This teleseminar is an example of one of the many benefits we provide our members. We have recordings of approximately 70 teleseminars, which are yours with membership in NABBW. You won't see them if you're not a member, however, because these teleseminars, the recordings, are archived in the members-only area. I do hope that you think these calls are as exciting and interesting as I do, because I believe that the three teleseminars a month that we're offering our NABBW members are one of the best benefits to membership, because you have opportunity to learn so much from so many wonderful and talented and knowledgeable women. Now, as to the format of the call today, I will be introducing today's guest, Barbara Hollis, or Barb, as she says I can call her, in a moment, and she and I will spend about 30 minutes discussing how to pursue your passion. After that, we will open the call to questions from you, our audience, and we hope that you will bombard us with them. So without further delay, let me introduce today's guest, Barb Hollis, and we'll launch right into our discussion. I love the way that Barb introduced herself to me in the bio that I posted on the invitation when she says, coloring outside the lines is an activity that resonates with her. At an early age, she took the road less traveled and has never looked back. So that makes you, Barb, a woman after my own heart. Her formal education includes a Bachelor of Arts degree in Business Administration from Western Washington University and a Juris Doctor degree from Gonzaga University School of Law. Writing is her passion, and her life experience provides lots of writing fodder. Currently, she is an associate editor for a New York firm, Call Street, and also founder of Hollis Writing Services. She balances this against her own writing pursuits, including a novel series in progress, encouraging young writers, and numerous community volunteer projects. She recently won the National Association of Baby Boomer Women's writing contest for her essay, Muting the Sound, which was about what would you do if you had control of a remote, like a remote control for your TV, only it could control your life. It was a great essay, and I love the fact that she was our top winner. Barbara self-published her first book, From Dust to Dust, a poetry collection, in 1985. Other writing accomplishments include contributions to Mistletoe Madness, edited by Miriam Hess, 2004, A Cup of Comfort for Military Families, edited by Colleen Sell in 2008, Faith, Hope, and Healing by Dr. Bernie Siegel in 2009, and the Spoke Right Journal, Spring 2009, Summer 2009, and Winter 2010 issues. She's also a blogger for the Seattle PI newspaper, Apartment Living Reader Blog. Before I launch into some of the questions that I promised our listeners that we would cover today, Barb, is there anything that you'd like to say?
Yes, Ann, I'd just like to say I'm really excited to be on the call today, and I invite our listeners just to relax and enjoy our time together, because we're going to talk about what comes to you naturally, what's fun for you. So I'm glad to be here and look forward to the next half hour with you folks.
Excellent. The first question that I'm going to ask you, Barbara, might sound a little bit strange, but it's something that's always fascinated me, and that is I hear a lot of times you'll hear internet marketers talk about pursuing your passion, and, of course, pursuing your passion is our theme for today. But sometimes I wonder, it's just the strangeness of the fact that I have a fascination with words, sometimes I wonder when people hear pursuing your passion, what do they define as passion? I mean, because sometimes we think of passion in terms of the hot novels of, you know, romance, and that's really not the kind of passion that we're talking about here today. So let's start with you giving us a definition, Barbara, of passion.
Passion for me is, it's about the desire of your heart. What is your calling? What is it that brings you joy? It's fun, it's easy, it's who you were created to be. It's about using your God-given gifts and talents to help other people's and improve the world at the same time. For some of you, it may be the hot-blooded passion romance novel, but in the context we'll talk about today, that's how I would define passion.
All right, very good. So, assuming that you still have passion ahead of you, and I'm sure you do, things that you still want to do, things that you're working toward achieving, can you tell us a little bit about your journey that got you to where you are today, the discovery so far to date of your passion?
Well, Anne, I've followed my heart through a variety of experiences. When I was a young child, I started writing. I think I was probably, well, old enough maybe to hold a crayon, and I started making greeting cards for people. That sort of blossomed into writing poetry when I was a teenager. And then from there, I pursued a business degree and went on to law school, where I was actually pursuing my passion for justice in the legal system in the United States. But that sort of took a detour when I got married, when I was still in law school and my husband had cancer. And that didn't turn out so well. I got married when I was 30 and my husband died 3 years later, so I was a widow by the age of 33.
Oh, my.
Which sort of changed my perspective on life greatly. And I think likely changed probably the path of what I perceived my passion to be and what my life was going to look like. So I met my second husband about a year later, and we had another near life and death experience. I was beginning to wonder what was wrong with me, but anyway, he survived that, which was a good thing. And then in 2003, actually, I came to a point where I decided that, you know, what was it that I really loved to do? And I realized that I really loved to write. So I decided it was time to start taking it seriously. And so what I did then was got a little bit more education and realized this is what really brought me joy.
The writing brought you joy.
Yes, it did.
All right. That's really important, I think, to know what you have a passion for. And I know that for myself, it's something that I've actually had to spend time thinking about. I don't know if that's typical of women or not, but I think maybe it is. I think maybe that because we as women are so often trained to be so outwardly centered, you know, on helping other people, that I think sometimes we sublimate what our own passion is, and then trying to figure out what it is can be a really challenging process. I know for me, I sat down and actually had to think about things from the past that made me happy, and those were, you know, the first steps toward, okay, things that are making me happy, you know, maybe those lead to something that has to do with passion. So with your own discovery of your own passion, you got us to that point of deciding that you were going to write. Would you say that there were no more obstacles after that?
I would like to tell you that, no, since then it had been smooth sailing, but we know how life is, and that was not going to be the case. So actually, my husband and I had been in property management. We managed a low-income apartment building for about 12 years, and we came to a crossroads back in about 2007 when my husband's health was being threatened, I guess is the correct word to use. As his blood pressure continued to increase, the doctor said to him, do you really want to continue in this career? Because, you know, it's kind of getting to like that life and death sort of situation. So we totally agreed that that was, even though it was a great thing we were doing, and again, as you talked about earlier, Ann, about reaching out to other people and helping them and their goals and dreams, we decided that it was time to put ourselves first. Mm-hmm. So at the age of 48, I'll admit my age here, we left everything because as apartment managers, we lived where we worked. So mm-hmm. that meant not only our income was gone, but our housing was gone as well. So I was truly at a point where we had basically lost everything. And I was faced with the question, you know, what do I want to do with my life? I had a clean slate. That was the good news and the bad news. So it was time to start over. So I had the opportunity then really to do some reflecting, as you just talked about, and really look at it and do an evaluation and say, what is it that you really want to do? You know, I like wasn't quite 50 yet, so I thought, I still have a lot of life left to live, so why don't I do what makes me happy? And it did take some time because, of course, at first you're sort of filled with all that fear about, yeah, there's a lot of empty space, but what about a job? What about an income? And those sort of things. But I decided to look past that and really just look into my heart and decide what it was that made me happy.
Okay. Well, I know that I followed some steps that I got guidance from working with a coach that helped me to start to figure out where my passions lay. And for me, I think it's interesting. I'll just give a little aside here that I started out in college. I started out to be a fashion designer, but then realized that I would have to spend my junior year in New York studying it through the program that I was in and then probably have to live in a big place like New York in order to make my living as a fashion designer. And like you, I got married while I was in college. So my husband having a job in the Midwest kind of made it difficult for me to figure out how I was going to be a fashion designer in New York or L.A. or something like that. So I did that thing of, you know, sublimating that dream of that design kind of a concept. And I got a master's degree in writing, and during that time found that I was very interested in older women and did my thesis on how women over 50 get information. But when I graduated from college, I couldn't find a degree in that, so I went into work in an advertising agency and eventually owned my own advertising and PR company and got into web design. So I think that it's just so fascinating that a year ago December, I ran into someone who found out that I had a blog. Just my personal blog was about boomers and boomer lifestyle, and they said, oh, you might be interested that the NABBW is for sale. And so that's for me, as I got a chance to come back to what was important to me early on. That's what brings me here as the head of the NABBW. So it sounds to me like that, in a way, you did the same sort of thing, looking at what do you want to do now, and you looked back at things that you have enjoyed in the past. But could you take us through the actual steps that you took to get to figuring out where you wanted to go with that concept of doing something with your clean slate?
Sure. The first thing I did was I knew I needed to stop running away from what was going on in my life. Because, of course, sometimes when we get to that point, we're filled with fear.
Mm-hmm.
And fear of the unknown, fear of, you know, what's going to happen to us. And at some point, you have to put those to the side and start asking yourself some questions. So I ran through a few questions like, what do I love to do? And then beyond that, so I wrote those down. And then I thought, you know, what is my dream? What do I want to accomplish in my life? So one of the things I put on my list was I wanted to have a book on the New York Times bestseller list. And, of course, these dreams didn't necessarily have to have any method or rhyme or reason to them, but just something that was in my heart. So I started making a list of some of my dreams. One of them that's on my list is I want to learn how to fly an airplane. I haven't done that yet, but it's on there.
Mm-hmm.
Then looking at it, so I have this list of things, and then how do I get there? So making lists is one of the things I do well. For anybody that's on the call that knows me, knows that I love to organize, and how I do it is lists. My husband just laughs at me, like I have these notebooks all over the house that are filled with lists. But they're even better when you actually cross things off the list.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's such a great feeling of accomplishment, isn't it?
It definitely is. So then what I did is I started taking inventory of the skills that I had and what my education was. So I had done some freelance work. I had done some editing for a company out of California. And actually, it was a topic that I was interested in. And I sent for, you know, the 30 days, you can review it sort of thing. And I started reading through this huge notebook that he sent me. And there was so many typographical errors, and it was horrible. So I sent him a note, and I said, okay, I'm returning this to you, but I just want to let you know that this product that you're putting out for, and it was quite a sum of money, it said is not very good. So so I know how to edit, so would you be interested in my services? And actually he did. He hired me for 2 or 3 jobs. So that was great. So I had that experience as an editor, and my education with my law degree and my business degree, I thought, well, okay, I know how to think like a lawyer. I don't have an up-to-date license to practice, but I still have those skills. So maybe is there some way that writing and my law school education can come together? So that's when, similarly to what you did, talk to a coach, I went and approached Emily, who is a dear, who is a career counselor at my alma mater at Gonzaga University, where I graduated. And I thought, okay, I'm stuck. I don't know what to do. So I think I need to go to somebody who might give me some direction. And that began the journey to finding the job that I have right now and that I love to do.
And how long did the journey take you?
Actually, from the time, let's see, we left in March of 2007. I was hired at my new job in July of 2007. So actually a very short time.
It does sound like it was fast. And
it didn't seem like it at the moment, but now when I reflect back and look like that, it was only a few months. But I truly believe that doing that upfront homework and really doing an assessment of what I had to work with, and being focused then on where I put my efforts on what I wanted to do so that I wasn't, like, you know, jumping all over the place and going, well, I might do this or I might do that, because, you know, that wastes a lot of energy as well. So after having several sessions with Emily and, you know, we talked about possibilities and she was said, well, look, we can look on the Internet and start checking things out. So she was the one that had suggested Craigslist as well as some other online websites to look for jobs. So I went to, well, let's see, writing and editing is what I know how to do. So for those of you who might want to do writing or editing, Craigslist, as we know, is a great resource. So I went to Craigslist, and every week, probably about 3 times a week, I would go to the 2 different sections on writing, so writing jobs and writing gigs. And I picked up a few freelance things I did that didn't pay much. But I found this interesting opportunity, which is the job that I am working at right now, as an associate editor in New York. And I should tell you, and before I got this far, one of the things I did as well was I sat down and figured out what my ideal job would look like.
Ah, good
point. Did I want to work full-time? Did I want to work part-time? Did I want to commute to work? Did I want to telecommute? Did I want to work from home? How much did it need to pay? What kind of flexibility did I want to have? Did I want to work 5 days a week? Did it matter when I worked? My husband had retired at that point because of his health, just to try and get things back on track. So I decided that a couple of things. One, I could do a part-time job would be great because that way we still had an opportunity to do things together. Flexible hours, paid well, and I really wanted to telecommute so that I didn't have to go to the office and, you know, everybody has the reason, I guess, why they want to work from home. But that was one of mine. So when I saw this job, and it was like, it was everything I had asked for. And it was almost too good to be true because, you know, sometimes we have dreams and we think, nah, it's not ever going to happen. And then I looked at it and I was like, flexible hours, part-time, telecommute. So, and the interesting thing was you either had to have an MBA or a law degree, a JD.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, wow, is this
so you're doubly qualified.
Exactly. And the other thing was if you had some previous editing experience was a plus, which I had done that as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I applied for it, sent in my resume, and thought, okay, well, am I going to hear anything or nothing? And probably it was only a few days, I think maybe 3 to 5 days later, and I got an email that said, you've passed the preliminary review stage, so we're going to have a conference call inviting associate editors to come on the line with us and just kind of get some idea about what the job entails and whether you're interested in it. So called in, went through the preliminary things. Then there was a period where we did some test calls. So basically what I do, the company I work for, we do financial earnings reports. So in a nutshell, what it comes down to is I do like a technical edit. So for me, it's about making sure that every word is exactly correct.
Mm-hmm.
The way the person says it. So on the other hand, I look at it and say, I get paid to learn how to write better, to edit better, and so it not only improves what I do for them, but it improves what I get to do for myself.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been absolutely awesome. I've worked for them now for almost 2 years, and I have to say they are probably the best employers I've ever had. They appreciate the people that work for them so much. So, and it pays well, and it's what I love to do, and it's great.
Excellent. Now, you've been doing this job at the same time that you've been writing your book, How to Grow Your Dreams?
Yes, I have. So the good thing about this job is that because we deal with a number of clients from around the world, is that basically we are busy like quarterly, and so in the in-between times, not as much.
Mm-hmm.
So during those down times, there's the opportunity that I have to do some of my writing. So I've been working on this e-book, How to Grow Your Dreams. I've also, as you mentioned earlier, the novel series that I'm working on. So it's been the best of both worlds. The ebook, the How to Grow Your Dreams, basically has 21 ingredients that I've pulled together with some quotes, and they will have expanded chapters that refer to each of those ingredients that will be available shortly to those who are on the call. And we'll talk about later about the gift that we're going to offer them. Also, my novel project that I'm working on actually features a baby boomer woman, Anna Marie Southcott Whittington.
Okay, what a great name.
Yes, I enjoy it. And I discovered that I've written a lot of nonfiction, but when I started writing fiction, I really discovered that truth about how the characters actually do write the story for you, which
mm-hmm.
was awesomely amazing. Anybody that wants to have try their hand at writing a novel, National Novel Writing Month is coming up in November, and that's when I wrote my first one in 2006. The challenge is 50,000 words in 30 days. So basically, it's just about getting a novel out of your heart onto the page. So it's a great motivator, and actually, I have 4 of them written in the series, so now I just need to get them spruced up and find a publisher that's interested in them.
Excellent. Well, I do want to talk a little bit about the gifts that we have for the people on the call today, but before we get to that, you said that, as far as I can tell, a specific resource that worked for you in trying to go from the step of thinking about what would be the passion and what you'd like to do, one of your key resources that you've mentioned was Craigslist. Are there any other resources that you would recommend to our listeners, keeping in mind that perhaps not everybody wants to do something that involves writing?
Yes, that's true. What I would say is, yes, Craigslist is an opportunity, and, of course, Craigslist has a lot more than just writing opportunities on there.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the Internet really is a great source of looking for different things that might interest you, You know, all of us have, we feel like we've been, you know, grown up with Google, even though it's been only around for a few years. But it's a great, the internet is a great opportunity to do some research and also to connect with people. One other thing that I've found is through the university, they also had a mentor program for people who had similar jobs. So in my case, I was looking for a writer, but they also had, you know, different opportunities than that. So if you maybe you wanted to be an engineer or, in your case, Anne, like a fashion designer. But it's really important, too, to do, like, an information interview. Find somebody who's in the profession. Mm-hmm. And most people love to talk about their job. So, again, it could be, like, you know, your neighbor knows somebody or the whole 6 degrees of connection to almost anyone. But finding somebody who's doing the job that you love to do. Even on the Internet, you can find them. Send them an email because sometimes email correspondence and then maybe a follow-up phone call
mm-hmm.
can net you some results. And, you know, we've been in places where you can shadow somebody for a day and see what their job is and see if they'd like to do, if that's something you'd like to do. There's internship opportunities. There's so many ways that we can actually kind of dip our toe into the water. And, you know, we may think that this is what you want to do, and then after you get there, you know, maybe you want to be in the medical field, and then you discover the first day in
mm-hmm.
school that you can't stand the sight of blood. Well, that's probably not going to work too well.
Right. Well, I do agree that job shadowing or internships are talking that can't be stressed enough. The concept of finding someone who's doing what you want to do and talking to them, and I'm also realizing as you're speaking that there's a website, because you've mentioned going online, there's a website that's called Vocation Vacations. And I think that whole website is about the whole concept, kind of like a job shadowing, where you, during your time that you're on vacation, you can go try out a job and or talk to someone who's in a job that you think you'd like to do. So you get to spend your vacation test driving a job, and then you would certainly find out if you have one of those challenges like a you think you want to go into medicine, but you can't stand blood, or you think you want to run a bed and breakfast, and then you find out, oh, there's an awful lot of house cleaning that I have to do. Yeah. Then you suddenly, or maybe the house cleaning might go along with that property management type of a job that you were talking about in your early career. Is certainly there's a lot of cleanup that probably gets involved with that most people don't think property management is going to be about that. But it can be, I believe. So there are sometimes surprises with jobs or careers that we hadn't realized, and so some kind of way to find out about it, either by talking or test driving it in some way, is certainly something that I agree with you is an excellent way to find out if this is something that excites you and you can't wait to do more, or if you go, oh, you know, this isn't quite what I thought it was.
I think one other thing that is another good way to kind of discover maybe what your passion is or what you're good at is to
mm-hmm.
talk to people who have been around you. So your friends, your family, maybe colleagues, because oftentimes people see us differently than we see ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And they may see a gift in you that you didn't necessarily know that you had
mm-hmm.
or something that you just kind of take for granted. So, you know, if you're thick-skinned enough to put your ego and your self-esteem on the line, of course I would ask people that I trusted and respected to answer that question. But I think that they can give us insight that, you know, like people would say, wow, you know, you're really organized, or yes, I really do enjoy what you read, or, you know, you really have a gift of working with people. So I think that there's some insight we can get from outside of ourselves, too, besides listening to our own kind of instincts, gut reaction, you know, what makes your heart race because you just love to do it so much.
All right. A very good point. Now, I know that our listeners are probably aware that the two gifts that you're offering have to do with figuring out how to pursue your passion, because we did list the gifts on the promotional material that we sent out. So they should be aware that there are two gifts that you're offering, Barb. One is a free checklist for pursuing your own passion, and the second one is a free slideshow presentation, How to Grow Your Dreams. And I've seen the first earlier versions of this slideshow, so I certainly want to tell everyone listening as a third party here that it's an excellent slideshow, and I can't wait to see the final version of it. But at this point, since it ties in so much with these steps that people need to go through to figure out what their passion is and pull it out of themselves, what might be something. And then once you figure out what it is that you love to do, then there's that step of how do you turn that into something that makes money. So why don't we give you a chance right now, Barbara, to tell people a little bit more about these two gifts and then how they can receive them from you.
Okay. The first one, the free checklist, what I've done basically is just kind of gone over some of the points that Ann and I talked about, and just in a simple two-page document, kind of given you a checklist to go through. We've talked about some things today, and I know for me that it really helps to have something in writing that you can go back to and refer to. And also, not only for yourself, but if you have friends or family that may be going through a time right now where they're also doing some soul searching, feel free to share that with them as well. The second gift, the slideshow on how to grow your dreams, basically what that is kind of the preamble, shall we call it, to the ebook of how to grow your dreams. So basically there are 21 ingredients that I've developed, starting off with a quote that refers to each one of them. So just to give you, I won't spill the beans on all 21, but let me give you a couple of ideas of what they might be. One of them is enthusiasm, and the quote that goes to that is, if you can give your son or daughter only one gift, let it be enthusiasm. And that quote is by Bruce Barton. A second one, ingredient, is boldness. A ship in the harbor is safe, but that's not what ships are built for. And we'll end it with one last one, as we've been talking about today, passion.
Mm-hmm.
Life is not about waiting for the storm to pass. It's about learning how to dance in the rain. Ironic, because it is raining here today after we've had sunshine for months. So,
all right.
So for those of you who would like to get those two gifts from me, have me send them to you, I would like you to send an email to me, and my email address is, and I'll say it first and then spell it out for you, Barbara@BarbaraHollis.com, and Barbara is spelled not like Barbara Streisand, so it's B-A-R-B-A-R-A, at, and then Barbara again, and my last name is spelled Hollis, H-O-L-L-A-B-E. .com. So Barbara@BarbaraHollis.com.
Excellent. Very good. I do hope that all of you on the call will send Barbara an email and receive these gifts, because I do think that, you know, she said she's a great list maker. So this is not just any old list. This checklist will be very, very effective for you. Now, one of the things that before I open the call up to questions from those of you who are listening, you've given us the result of the various steps that you went through, and the result was getting this dream job, and the wonderfulness that it involves, as far as I can see, is that it allows you time to spend time with your husband as well as to work on projects like your novels. But I think that there might be some of us listening, some people listening might be saying, well, but what if I don't know if this is really my dream? You know, what if I start off in a direction and it turns out that it's a dead end? So do you have any advice for people that are a little bit hesitant or timid because, you know, there's a lot of an undertaking to go off in this direction and, you know, you don't want to be disappointed at the end?
Well, I think if we look back over our lives, since most of us, if we're baby boomer women, have been around for a few decades, that if we kind of survey our past, we would have found that there have been on more than one occasion something that we tried and maybe didn't like it so much.
Mm-hmm.
So what did we do then? We kind of regrouped and said, okay, well, that didn't work. What else can I do? But I think that I have found in my own life that even when we were doing the property management job, and it was about as far-fledged from anything that was in my training, but one thing that I learned out of it was that I always described it when I spoke about it was the ultimate customer service job. It was about dealing with people. And you know, when you deal with people, it doesn't matter where you are, what environment. Some things fit better than others, but there's always something to learn.
Mm-hmm.
So what I would say was, you know, kind of stop, as we talked about, go through the list, kind of form an idea, talk to somebody about it, whether it's a coach, as we talked about, maybe do a job shadowing or maybe check out the vacation.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, maybe do an internship, maybe see if there's some place where you can try it out for a little bit. But if you try it and it doesn't work, I mean, it doesn't, like, give you that ultimate satisfaction that you were thinking about, there is no shame in walking away from that and trying something else. I can recall when I was trying to make a job transition and I had applied for a job and, you know, circumstances really needed to change. But when I went to that job interview, my mindset was this, that at any time I was the one who got to say whether I continued or whether I said, no, this isn't what I want to do. I want to try something else. So just remember, ladies, that ultimately, you hold the control in your hands about your life.
Mm-hmm.
So if you decide that something isn't working for you, that doesn't mean that you have to keep on pursuing it. You can stop at any time and say, this isn't a good fit for me, so let's try something else. And there's no shame in that. Actually, I think it takes a lot more bravery to stand up and say no and then to continue on the same path and, you know, work at a job you hate for 30 years.
Oh, good point. I think that there's nothing that kills your soul more than working at a job that you hate.
Exactly.
But one more, well, I probably have two more questions before I open the call here. So
okay.
I'm sure that our guests are anxious for the opportunity to ask you their own questions. But given that you're at a point where you've found your passion, you've set a goal, you've achieved it, is that the end, or do you have dreams that are ahead? Is it a kind of a wash, rinse, and repeat kind of a thing? So
I think that's the best phrase to describe it, because I think what happens when you're successful once, it builds some momentum, and then all of a sudden you realize that there are no walls, there are no boxes. I also teach a class, a writing class about writing outside the box. And it's a time, I think, to drop our preconceived notions about what is and what can be and really say, you know what, anything is possible. There is really nothing impossible in life. And so as soon as we kind of step up to the plate and brush off our self-esteem, because, you know, oftentimes when we've gone through a tough time, either we feel guilty about what happened, or I should have done this, or I should have saved more money, or, you know, we lost our house, I should have had a job. And so we come up with all these excuses of how we could have rewritten the scenario.
Mm-hmm.
But I think by having one success under your belt, then all of a sudden it's like you've moved along the path and you go, well, okay, if I've done that, well, what about this?
Mm-hmm.
And I think it gives you confidence, which I think that none of us can ever have too much of. Unless, of course, it spills over to arrogance, but that's a whole different word.
All right. Excellent. Any other words of advice that you have for our listeners here today?
Well, let me see. I would say that when we talked about this to start with, that we described it as pursuing your passion,
mm-hmm.
and it really is a pursuit, because you have to want it. You have to want to change. You have to want to go for your dreams. You want to have to live out your passion, and you have to take the steps to get there, because someday, you know, the doorbell's not going to ring, and you open the door, and there's a gift wrap box that says, here, this is your passion. This is what you've been looking for. Because it doesn't work that way. You have to invest some of yourself into it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure there's been times when a passion has fallen into somebody's lap. But when we're not looking for something, we won't even know it. We might trip over it.
Mm-hmm.
And we wouldn't even realize it was there. But I also believe this, that when you make the choice to pursue your passion, that there's a fire that gets ignited in your heart that really nothing can quench. And if each of us chose to do that, we could improve this world like you can't even imagine. Because when I run across people who have found the passion of their heart, and I know for me, I'm sure that I glow much more than I used to,
mm-hmm.
that it's exciting because it's like, it is like a fire that's lit. It's kind of like the one candle that lights the next. And so when you found your passion, I mean, as you're doing what you love to do right now, and I found mine, and then we start talking, and then somebody else catches the vision of what they love to do. And pretty quick, I know when we were doing property management, and it was like we were a block there that the attitude of the people had changed. We changed it, and then it just moved on. And it was like block after block. After a while, we had like a 4 or 5 block area, businesses, people that were walking through, they were like, wow, what's changed? So it's exciting. I mean, to me, that's what life is about. It's about pursuing our passion, doing what we love to do, getting other people excited to do their own thing, because in the process, we make the world a better place to live.
Excellent. All right. Well, I have unmuted the lines now, so any of the callers here are free to chime in, jump in, and ask their own questions. So I'll stop talking here for a minute, and somebody just jump in and ask a question, please.
Everybody's very quiet.
Yes, I noticed that.
Well, my name is Barbara, and I appreciate what you're saying about following your passion. And I did come online a little bit late because I was at work, but I wanted to ask when, and you may have already addressed that, which is why I said that, but I wanted to ask, what do you do when you are following your passion,
mm-hmm.
and all of a sudden you hit some serious bumps and problems that are just almost like showstoppers? How do you handle that?
So is what you're telling me that you are pursuing your passion and now it's kind of, shaking your confidence that you're going the right way?
Correct. Correct.
Okay.
Some things have happened. I thought I was doing the right thing. I felt very confident about it.
Mm-hmm.
But not a lot of progress has been made. And then in the past, it still happens to be very timely, in the past week, a number of major shifts have happened that makes me wonder, how did I get into this? And how do I deal with it? And how do I move forward?
Sure.
So when you were faced with challenges like that, how did you deal with it?
Well, I think, first of all, one of the things that I believe is that oftentimes as we're following our passion or following, you know, really what our heart wants to do, that things will come up along the way, obstacles, and I think they're meant to do a couple things. One, it really challenges our commitment to the passion of our heart. Because you're right, Barbara, it's just because that we've decided to walk on this path and we may be doing what we love to do, it's not always going to be easy. So just because there are some bumps, it doesn't necessarily mean that you're not doing the right thing. The second possibility is this, is that the obstacles may be in front of you to help you maybe fine-tune what you're doing. I'm not sure what your circumstances are, but sometimes, because I know, like, even for me, in the job that I'm doing now, doing the editing and doing my own writing, is that it's not always smooth. And sometimes it's like I'm overwhelmed by the amount of things I'm doing both at work, and then there are several volunteer activities that I do as well, because that's who I am, that one of the things I know that I struggle with is balance. And so sometimes things will come up just to illustrate for me that, you know what, your life isn't very balanced right now. But I guess the third point is that just because there's obstacles that have come up, I wouldn't say it's time to, you know, throw out the baby with the bathwater. I don't think that it necessarily means that this is the wrong path that you're on.
Well, that's very encouraging to me. Thank you.
You're very welcome.
I wasn't very specific, but, you know, your answers were surprisingly specific given what I'm dealing with. So I really do appreciate that. Thank you.
And if you'd like to, Barbara, if you'd like to send me an email later, if you have any questions or any more encouragement I can offer you, please do so.
Would I use the same email address that you provided for the book?
Yes, that would be great.
Okay, that's wonderful. Thank you. That's very generous of you.
You're welcome.
Hi, my name's Kathy.
Mm-hmm. Hi, Kathy.
Hi, Kathy.
Hi. I would just like to follow up on the previous caller as well. I have the feeling that we're leaving out the other half of the equation, which is, for want of a better word, the world.
Mm-hmm.
A person could have tons of confidence and really believe in their work and have and produce, in fact, good quality work. And this is often the case with creative people. It's, as we know statistically, it's the case with people who start their own businesses, most of which fail. So I think to put the burden and the onus on it, you know, or the focus on it only being a question of finding your passion, you may know your passion and you may have found it and you may believe in your work, and that is by no means a guarantee that the world is going to, you know, stand up and say, well, we're going to buy it, we're going to order it, we're going to come and see it, we're going to, you know, watch it, we're going to pay you for it. It doesn't necessarily by any means work out that way. And
you're right.
I think for people to think, oh, it's all up to me, I must not have enough confidence, or maybe I don't believe in my work enough, or, you know, it isn't just about the individual. I mean, you must know all the examples as a writer. I mean, Dr. Seuss was, what, turned down by 26 publishers before? If his wife hadn't nagged him and believed in him, and there are a million examples like that.
Exactly.
And restaurants fail every day of the week, and, you know, they might have believed in it till the cows came home, but that doesn't mean it's going to go.
You're right. So you're right. So to balance out that, it is an equation. So you have your passion, you have talent, you have confidence, but you're right. If what you desire is something that you can sell in the marketplace to make a living off of, because, the example that I used in my life was being a writer and editor and getting paid for it.
Right.
So, but to be honest with you, the editing part of my job that I do, that I telecommute and do with a New York company, is really where I make my living, so to speak. As I call it, it's my paying job.
Yeah.
The other writing that I do, is still to come. So it's kind of like the tree that I've planted, and, you know, it needs to be pruned and a whole lot of fruit off it. Yeah, there's been some, but, you know, it's a work in progress. So, but I guess the other part to balance this discussion too would be to say this, is that some people, the passion of their heart may not be something that is either a commodity or a skill that that will be sold in the marketplace. So
right.
I know that there's discussions like, you know, from a creative standpoint, like people who are writers that their sole desire is to write either for themselves or their families, but it's not that they need to be validated by having the work sold.
Or they need an income from it.
Yes, if that's what they want to do, if what their passion is something that they want to have be their job, their paying job, then you're right. Then there's another part to the equation, which is, can the economy bear? Yeah.
Right.
So
yeah, I think that's a huge distinction. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Whether you need to draw an income from it.
Exactly. So thank you for making that point.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Anyone else? I know I've got a similar question to that one, but slightly different, Barb, came in earlier from someone who couldn't make the call, and she said, I'm unemployed. We filed for bankruptcy. Our bank account is empty. I don't have any financial resources to commit to pursuing my passion, and I am feeling hopeless. What can I do?
I think, first of all, and I think this applies to all of us, that first of all, what we have to hold on is hope. I think as women, we have lived through a lot in our lives, dark days, bright days. But one of the things that has helped keep us going is that we can find a glimmer of light, even if it's something so small, you know, like a firefly in the darkness. And by holding on to that one thread of hope is really how we're able to stop, to continue to make the next step. So as that famous quote goes, that the night is always the darkest before the dawn. And it sounds like this woman is experiencing one of those situations. And to be honest with you, I felt like I was in a similar place before that things turn around in our life as well. So I think that in one respect, we go back to, instead of looking at the cup as half empty, what does she have? And that's what I did, is I looked at it and said, not only what do I have as skills, my education, what resources do I have, what people do I know? Is there somebody who can, let us sleep in their basement, bedroom or whatever for a short period of time?
Mm-hmm.
One of the jobs that we did in the summer of transition is we housed at for, a woman who was, we're on the West Coast. She was actually on the East Coast at a children's camp, and we took care of her two basset hounds for the summer.
Mm-hmm.
Trust me, that was an experience, especially since they were used to her schedule, which was getting up at like 1 o'clock in the morning. So fumbling around in the dark and taking two basset hounds out in the middle of the night was quite an experience. But anyway, it did get us further on to our destination. And one other thing, too, is that a lot of people, and I know personally, I realize this, is that we have a lot of stuff in our life, things that we may have bought that we can't use, and, we have tools now like, eBay, Craigslist, things like that, where actually you can convert some of those things that you don't have anymore into cash, or maybe you can barter your services or whatever. But I think that sometimes when things look so hopeless to us that we think we have nothing. But on the other hand, we still have ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
We have life. We have breath. We have a brain that we've been, given to use. And I think that after we've sat down and cried and grieved over the loss that we have, then I think that we can stop and figure out what we do have. And not to dismiss this lightly, because it is a huge situation, and there's so many people in this country right now that are going through similar things. But it is possible to dream again. I know that after my first husband died, and we had gone through actually 5.5 years of battling his cancer, and at that point I was pretty wiped out myself, and then my grandmother died 9 months later. So I was pretty much a wreck. I think the rest of my family was pretty concerned about whether what way I was going to go at that point. But I chose life, and I chose to use what I had and to figure it out.
Oh, and I think that there can be steps that you take in the interim. For example, I know I've got a friend who's recently divorced, and finances are really, really tough for her. And what she really feels that is her passion is that she's a photographer. But photography is not always, if you're a self-employed photographer, it's not always a way that you can make a living, and yet it is a passion, and you can make a living at it if you give yourself enough time to develop a manner of making a living from it. So what she's done is that she's taken an interim job, which I can't imagine is anything that has to do with her passion. She's a checker in a grocery store, but it does give her income, and it does give her benefits, you know, health insurance,
right,
and that sort of thing, that gives her enough money that she can afford to live.
Exactly.
So she's got her basic needs covered, and then she can continue on with this grocery checker job while she builds toward the passion. And I think a lot of people should look in terms of, you know, those sorts of taking steps to get where you want to go.
Exactly. And the other thing, too, as a photographer, is that there are places, you know, where you can photos for like for use of stock photos,
mm-hmm.
and so but you're right, so you can kind of, because that's what I found too, is that again, back to, you know, editing that I do for my paying job, and then the writing that I do really to feed my passion.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, exactly. I agree with you, Ann.
All right, well, we have a couple of minutes left, so hopefully all of you out there, our listeners, will ask us a couple more questions, please.
Hi, it's Suzanne in Phoenix, and I just wanted to say how much I appreciate your sharing your story. It sounds like you've had the opportunity to regroup a few times.
Yes.
And very successfully, and it's inspirational, I'm sure, to others as well as to myself, and it's great to have you as a guest.
Thanks, Suzanne. One thing that I just wanted to say, and as an encouragement for the people on the call, is that I'm talking to you today because that I entered the writing contest and received first prize, and that this was part of the prize package. So, and this is just an awesome gift, and I really thank you for the opportunity to talk to everybody. I know that when I looked at the options of my choices for what I could do, and I saw the teleseminar, and I was like, wow, that will be a little bit of a stretch. And several of my friends, and a woman actually who I'd done some coaching with, Monica Magnetti, who had done something with the Baby Boomer Women before, she's like, I think it was another Jean who said to me, please tell me that you said you were going to do the teleseminar.
Oh,
I said, of course, of course.
I'm so glad that you said that, Barb, because when I floated the concept of using a teleseminar as a prize with my staff, they
mm-hmm.
all said to me, oh, no, you've got to give money. You've got to give something like money. That's the only thing that will motivate writers. And I said, you know, I really think that some recognition and publicity would go a long way for a lot of people. So I'm glad to hear that you knew people and that they all thought it was a good prize. Maybe I will do it again.
Yes.
Well, I do want to remind people of your email address, your web address is www.barbarahollace.com, BarbaraHollace.com, and then you gave them your email address. Would you like to give that to them again so they can be sure and
yes.
sign up for your prizes and to ask you any questions that they might have?
Yes, it is Barbara@BarbaraHollace.com, B-A-R-B-A-R-A, and Hollace, H-O-L-L-A-C-E.
Excellent.
Thank you.
Sure. And before we close the call here, we are at the top of the hour, and we should be done. But you know, I hate to leave with anybody that has been a little shy and hasn't asked a question, but you're dying to. So I'll keep the lines open here and the recording going for a little bit longer if anyone else has a question they'd like to ask.
This is Sharon from Minnesota. I have a question about the article you wrote. Was it called Meeting the sound?
Yes.
Yes. How would we get a hold of that article? Is it on the website?
Anne, is it still listed on the website?
I think that it's come down from the website, but I could certainly, anybody that wanted to email me, I could get them a copy of the article, or you probably have a copy of it. If
I do have, Sharon, so if you'd like to just send an email to me, I can sure forward a copy of the article to you as well.
Oh, that'd be great, Robert. Thank you. I will.
You're
do
welcome.
That.
Okay, thanks.
Anyone else? All right, well, then I'm going
well,
to... Well,
okay. Can I throw in... Oh, it's Kathy again, and as you can see, I'm not shy. And I just... I just to throw in a quick 2 cents. About, particularly if you're going through a struggling, difficult, transitional time, and you are at the same time perhaps looking for your passion and what you might devote yourself to, but you also have, you know, real world concerns, not
yes.
to be alone, but to
yes.
maybe get a writing buddy, get a passion buddy, get a project buddy, get a creative buddy, get a group of people. I mean, I'm particularly thinking of that woman that Anne, that you mentioned before. I mean, it
mm-hmm.
seems that she is married, but he could be depressed as well.
Oh,
so
sure.
Not to be alone.
I agree. That's an excellent advice. Certainly, I think finding someone that I know that I have a person that I make a call to on a weekly basis, and we talk to each other for an hour. And the basic point of our weekly call is that we are holding each other's feet to the fire. You know, what said, this is what you said you were going to do last week. Did you get it done? And what are you going to do? What are you going to do
yeah.
next? And it is also great to have someone who can be a sounding board for thoughts and ideas that you have. And,
yes.
and also
yeah.
there can be, you know, networking groups of people that it's more than just a one-on-one kind of a
yes.
thing.
Yes, exactly.
Anyone else?
Thanks, Kathy.
You're welcome.
Well, Barb, it's been great talking with you today, and I thank all of our callers, too, who participated and asked good questions. Thank you, Barb, for being my guest and callers for your great questions, and I think we've had a wonderful discussion on pursuing your passion. So I am going to ask everybody to be sure and remember to contact Barb to get your gifts, because I think that they will really be helpful tools for helping anyone setting out to figure out what their passion is and how you're going to turn it from a dream into a reality. So I'm going to thank everyone for joining us and say goodbye.
Thank you.
Thanks, Anne.
Thank you. Bye now.
Bye.